ज्ञानील प्रेम धन करुणा प्रचुर हना प्रभु को था गेला जो ठाकुर स्वरूप रूप कहा सुनाता मोर स्वरूप रूप कहा सुनाता कहा दश रघुनाथ पतित पाव যুগ কাহা কবিরা এক কালে কোথা গেলা গোরা নটরা পাশানে কুটিব মাথা অনালে পশিব গৌরাঙ্গ গুণের নিধে কোথা গেলে পাব সেসব সঙ্গীর সনে যে কইল বিলা সে সঙ্গ না পাইয়া কান্দে নরতম সে সঙ্গ না পাইয়া কান্দে নরতম হরে কৃষ্ণ হরে কৃষ্ণ 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 হরে 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 রাম হরে রাম 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 হরে হরে Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Nitai Gaura Hari Bol. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada.
All glories to the disappearance day of Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaura Premananda. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. Namo Vishvara Krishna Sambhavi Shmati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namana Namaste Vasudhan Kravan Shaman Vasudhan Shaman Vasudhan Shaman Vasudhan. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for Radhika Mahaprabhu for singing so nicely for us. It's not only a great service to me, but an even better service to the rest of you to hear a nice bhajan rather than my humble self. Very important day today. Today is the disappearance day of Sri Gaura Kishore Das Babaji. It is also, of course, Ekadasi Day, and it is the first day of Bhishma Panchika. And to top it off, it's Thanksgiving Day on the Western calendar. So mostly I want to speak today about Gaura Kishore Das Babaji. And of course, he was a very important acharya in our disciplic succession, a great devotee, great Vaishnav, of course known as the spiritual master of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada's guru. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj happened to be the only disciple One disciple Gaura Kishore Das Babaji had, and that was only under duress. He had no desire to have that position. He also became the Shiksha disciple of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and that is why he is in our line of disciplic succession, being the Shiksha Guru of Bhaktivinoda, and then, of course, the actual Diksha Guru of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Gaura Kishore, of course, is known as the embodiment of renunciation, a devotee who is extremely pure, extremely deeply inspired by the Krishna prema, by the love of Radha and Krishna, of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and really totally disdained almost anything worldly. He was almost like an avaduta, somebody who had just no interest in material comfort, material pleasures in his life at all. So first I want to talk a little bit about his life history. He lived from... The biographies I have seen have not given exact years. Sometimes that's lost. We often know the disappearance day of Vaishnavas because by then they become great Vaishnavas and people note it. But when they're born, it's not always so obvious, and especially if you're not from a, you know, high-class or wealthy family, no one may really note it the exact year. But anyway, it was sometime in the 1830s, the middle 1830s probably that he was born, and he lived till about 19... I have two different dates, 1915 and 1917. Anybody know authoritatively which year he disappeared? 16.
No, 15.
15. Okay, we'll go with 15. That's the one that seemed most, you know. Okay, and he was born in what's in East Bengal, but is now Bangladesh. His marriage was arranged early, so he was married as a very young man, and he was a grain merchant in Grihastha life for about 20 years. And what happened was in 1849, so he couldn't have been... Well, at any rate, his wife passed away. And since his wife passed away, he had no more attachment to household life. He left his home in East Bengal, and he moved to Vrindavan. He was already a very advanced, great devotee, and people saw the signs and indications of that. But when he went to Vrindavan, he then became a complete renunciate. He was initiated by Bhagavat Das Babaji, who was the grand disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji, who of course was the sort of the leader of the Vaishnavas at that time, very, very great devotee. So he lived 30 years as a Paramahamsa Babaji in Vrindavan. We don't hear a lot about that, except that he was a very learned, he was a very renowned devotee that everybody respected. He was very much respected as a Paramahamsa, a Babaji in Vrindavan. And then after 30 years, he had a desire to see Mayapur. He hadn't been to Mayapur, and after the point, I think, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had discovered the Yoga Peak, where, of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had actually appeared, the actual place, which is sort of unknown, lost in the sands of time and the shifting Ganges River, you know, back and forth across like that to different places. So anyway, probably he was in his 60s by now. He moved to Mayapur area, Navadvip Mayapur, and he stayed there the rest of his life, basically. I wanted to mention, of course, his association with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which became very, very important. As I said, he's considered the Shiksha disciple of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So I'm going to read this a little bit. This is from a book called Babaji Maharaj by Karnamrita Das. It's in the Veda base. Anyway, you can find it there. In 1897, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur constructed his place of bhajan on the bank of the Saraswati River at Godruma, the island of the nine islands of Navadvip, which represents Kirtan. Previously, it had been the site of Sri Nityananda's Namuhata, the place whence Lord Nityananda inaugurated his preaching exploits in Bengal under the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Here, the Thakur recited and explained the Srimad Bhagavatam and other topics regarding the conclusions of devotional service. And Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj would come and hear those talks with great delight. The Thakur often cited the behavior of Srila Gaurakishore to elucidate the meaning of the word nirapeksha, indifference to the material world. He often discussed the unequaled renunciation, pure devotion, and attachment to Krishna that Babaji Maharaj displayed. In the days of Thakur's retirement, the two souls met and associated in great happiness. So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur Maharaj officially retired from government service as a magistrate, then he moved to Godruma in the Mayapur area, and they associated greatly after that. In about 1909, he had exceedingly different variety of medical or bodily issues, and he was just totally uninterested. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati would repeatedly try to get him to take medicine or go see a doctor or go to a hospital. He wasn't interested. He wouldn't do it. He refused. But anyway, he became blind, totally blind in 1909 for the next 10 years of his life or so. And he lived in various places, didn't seem to bother him too much, but he also lived in Godruma with Bhaktivinoda Thakur off and on for some time. So they had a great amount of association and therefore established that relationship. Now, of course, in 1898, which had been shortly after he came to Mayapur, was the time when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur became his disciple. Of course, Bhaktisiddhanta was the son of Bhaktivinoda, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who had this very close relationship with Gaurakishore at that time, realized his greatness. And he told his son, of course, by custom, you wouldn't take initiation from your father, which would have been natural otherwise. Bhaktivinoda Thakur referred him to Gaurakishore Das Babaji to take initiation from. And of course, he went to him and asked for initiation and was refused. Not because he wasn't qualified, but because Gaurakishore Das Babaji was so renounced that he felt himself unqualified to give initiation. He didn't want any disciples. He didn't feel that he should take on that position, even though he was one of the most exalted devotees at the time. And then, of course, secondly, he felt even more incapable of taking Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj as his disciple, as he was one of the most learned scholars in the area. You know, he was proficient, Bhaktisiddhanta was proficient in languages, he was proficient in Sanskrit, in mathematics, in astronomy, astrology. He taught at universities. I think he was a a tutor to the king's sons, that sort of thing. So in other words, extremely qualified. Now, sometimes you read that Gorky Shore was illiterate. I don't think he was actually illiterate, because it describes that he, two books by Narottam Das Thakur that he always read, or kept with him at least. So, I mean, but he was not a scholar. He probably knew very little Sanskrit, you know, so feeling very unqualified. He refused him. And of course, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, this is the instruction of my father, and he completely agreed, and he recognized the qualities of this great Vaishnava, and so he continued to plead with him, and continued to be refused. And finally, well, I've heard different stories, but one of the ones that's dramatic, I don't know if it's true or not, but you hear the one about the bridge, you know, right? That he finally, they meet, and he's going across a bridge, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, if you don't give me initiation, I'll throw myself off this bridge, I'll kill myself, because my life is useless without taking diksha from you. Whether it was on the bridge or not, at any rate, that was the general sentiment. We know that that is true. That he was very, very persistent, and finally, all right, if you're really that insistent, you're that sincere and determined, I will give you initiation. So he does. So he becomes his one and only disciple. And so then he's living in Navadvipa for some time. I'm reading again. For some time, Babaji Maharaj stayed in Sarabhi Kunj and performed Hari Bhajan. His room, which adjoined the hall of the Kunja, has been preserved. Babaji Maharaj displayed fervent enthusiasm upon hearing the discourses of the Thakur. His only possessions were the tulsi beads he wore around his neck and the tulsi mala he kept in his hand for counting his rounds. So a little bit more about his level of renunciation. I'm now reading about the article posted in the ISKCON Desire Tree. Gorky Shore Das Babaji was the embodied form of Sri Rupa Raghunath's renunciation. Completely detached, he would wash discarded cloth to cover his body. He drank from a rejected clay pot, parched rice mixed with Ganges water, or simply some mud from the Ganga's bank sustained his life. Not exactly the Sunday feast. On Ekadasi, he didn't eat or drink a drop of water. Recognizing him to be a Mahabhagavat, many tried to serve him, but he never accepted. He didn't like to take personal service from devotees. He felt unworthy and felt that he should be serving them, if anything. Here's another one coming up. Now, it's interesting because he had no possessions, but sometimes reading through some of these pastimes, one pastime, he received some money from someone. The person wants to come and see him. He says, tell him to give me 2 rupees. So we did. So I was kind of wondering, you know, how does that square with the rest of the story? Well, apparently what happened, there was another, what explained this was sometime a little bit later, he entrusted, he had 100 rupees that he had gotten, that he collected from donations. He gave it to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, knowing that he was very capable, and said, please keep this in safekeeping for me, however you do that. And of course, so he put it in a bank. And then a couple days later, he sees Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he says, oh, I need to get that money back, because I need that money right now. I need to get it back. And he says, well, my son, Bhaktisiddhanta, put it in a bank. It'd take a couple days. I've got to go and get it and everything else. You know, be a little. He says, no, I need it right now. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a little bit wealthy, apparently, or at least, you know, had some means as a magistrate. I don't know if he'd completely retired at that point, but he took it out of his own pocket and gave it to him. He says, okay, I'll give you this if you need it. And he wonders why he needs it. And he said, I've heard that a great Vaishnav in Vrindavan needs help very badly, so I'm sending this money to him. So apparently, although he would collect money and he would never use a penny of it, he would always find some Vaishnav who needed help, and he would distribute and he would give it to them. So that was his practice. He never kept anything from himself. He used everything in the service of the Vaishnavas. Very, very remarkable. Okay, here's a story about the latrine. Interesting story here. On another occasion, Srila Babaji Maharaj remarked, it is not possible to properly worship the Supreme Lord in an outhouse. Okay. Having made this remark, he saw the people in the vicinity could not grasp the meaning, so he explained, a house where persons always indulge in eating and sensual pleasure is not a place for sadhus. Such places may appear to be ashrams or temples, but they are the abodes of lust. Sensual life may be permissible for the demigods, but not for the devotees of the Lord. Materialistic persons who live in this way imagine they are residing in heaven, but they actually live in a deep pool of excrement in the form of sense objects of the material world. However, when those who seriously worship the Supreme Lord take full shelter of him, wherever they reside becomes non-different to Sri Radhakund. So this was, of course, he was referring to apparently at that time, and we also see from Bhaktisiddhanta's writings, like if you read the Bhaktisiddhanta's purports of Chaitanya, not Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat, you know, Pundarika knows is very, very critical, right, of those around, very, very critical in many ways of sahajiyas and those who are pretentious or devious or deceptive in spiritual life. But apparently the sahajiyism was very rampant around the Bengal area at that time. And so Vaishnavas weren't well respected. And this was a great mission of Bhaktivinoda, Bhaktisiddhanta, Gaurakishore to combat this sort of false pretense. And so what he's referring to is ashrams and temples. Basically, the bhajaris and the proprietors are just involved in collecting money for sense, you know, Prabhupada would say showing the deity, collecting money for sense gratification. So that's what he's talking about. Now, a few days after these remarks are made, the proprietor of a Navadvip Dharmshal named Mr. Girish, accompanied by his wife, came to Babaji Maharaj. They humbly requested if he would allow them to build him a proper bhajan kutir, where he could perform his worship. They remarked that in the rain and cold season, he was in extreme hardship. And here they said, no, I'm not experiencing even the slightest hardship, but there is one thing that causes me difficulty. If you agree to help me, then I'll tell you what it is. They expressed their eagerness. So he said, many people come to see me with selfish motives. They do not desire their real welfare, and they simply create a disturbance in my bhajan. If you can give me your latrine, it will serve as a favorable place for my chanting the holy name of the Lord. I should be able to worship without disturbance. People hate to go there, and that way they will not disturb me and waste my human form of life. Now, why did all these people come to bother him? He's saying, well, a lot of them come to get blessings, right? They want to go to a holy person, a saintly person, ask for blessings for their material benefit, and he doesn't want to waste his time. Now, of course, if a sincere person came to him, he was very happy to instruct them, give his time, and try to help them in their spiritual life. On hearing this, he said, we'll do whatever you say, but we can't let you live in our privy. It'll be a sin for us. He says, no. He says, I'm not a saint. He said, you don't have to worry about that. I'm not a pujari in a temple. He says, if you oblige me, say so. Otherwise, I will not listen to you any longer. He was like this. He could be real sharp. And having no alternative, they agreed. They let him. They built a room adjoining it. He says, even if he didn't want it, those who serve you at least would have a clean room beside it. They cleaned up the latrine the best they could. It was next to their dharmshal, where people came, lodgers or whatever. And anyway, and they left it pretty much the same. And Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj stayed in the public latrine of a dharmshal to teach people in general that attachment to material affairs under the pretense of devotion is more foul-smelling than stool. So there we go. Apparently, according to another source, he stayed in that latrine about 6 months. So before moving on. Anyway, again, his extreme renunciation, he's always been very instructive, his own example of the unimportance of material things. Okay. So, again, going back to, although he had extreme renunciation, he wasn't dry, he wasn't personal, he wasn't harsh, really. He could be very instructive to help people to break some of their bad habits. But generally, he had this attitude, as a Vaishnava does, towards others, have always been one of service, especially to Vaishnavas. Although often he wouldn't be so very interested in people he thought were materialistic and having them come and see him. In fact, they'd sort of chase them off. He would offend them usually, say something very straightforwardly, very truthfully about their habits, and they would leave and wouldn't come back. But anyone who came who was a resident of Mayapur, someone who was born in Mayapur, they came to see him, he considered them, like an eternal, a resident of the Dham, and he would give them all respects and all appreciation. And although, as we said, he wasn't a great scholar, Didn't know Sanskrit. He did carry two books written by Narottam Das Thakur, Pratarana and Prema Bhakti Chandrika. Now, apparently, from all descriptions, so these two books are written in Bengali, fairly simple Bengali. Is that correct? Any of you know Bengali? They're more simple, right? For the more, in other words, Narottam wrote them for to be accessible to people. The average people could read them easier than some, you know, very difficult Sanskrit philosophy like that. So. In song.
Yeah,
they're poetry. It's more poetry, but it's very deep. I have read a translation of Prema Bhakti Chandrika. It's very sweet, very wonderful, very loving. It's, you know, full of Krishna Prema. You can tell very, very realized knowledge, and this was, of course, very attractive to the heart of Gaur Kishor Das Babaji. So he read that, and then he also, while he was sitting there in his seclusion, what do you think he was doing? Chanting the holy name. And there were time periods when he would chant 200,000 names of Krishna every day, 128 rounds of japa. So he was, he felt painful separation from Radha Govinda. He cried profusely. And as he wandered through the, well, this was in back when he was in Vraja, he would wander through the forest. He would chant the holy names. So that was more the time, because we don't hear much about it, but he was there 30 years in Vrindavan before he came to Mayapur. But, so he was very, very filled with love for Radha Krishna, and this came through, and he had this, you know, great intense feeling of separation of Radha and Krishna. He was also had a spiritual vision towards all devotees. Sometimes he would speak very harshly about material life and even like household life or, you know, like kind of materialistic people who just wanted to gain wealth and advancement like that. But he had a whole other side too. And this is another interesting pastime. Babaji Maharaj spoke gravely to a newly married man. A Vaishnav wife is extremely rare and difficult to find in this world. If one has the good fortune of having one, he should see it as a benediction from Krishna. The wife worships the husband as her lord and master. Similarly, the husband should worship his wife because she is Krishna Dasi, a servant of Krishna. In this way, the husband can protect his devotional enthusiasm by not considering his wife to be his maidservant, but that she is always the maidservant of Krishna. I think that's a very, very wonderful sentiment, because this is something that sometimes when there's problems in household life, in devotees, grihastha life, we have found as we work with householders that this is often the issue. They've no longer seen each other as servant of Krishna, servant of their spiritual master, as Vaishnavas, but just seen them in an ordinary way. You start, you know, familiarity breeds contempt. And so, you know, after, you know, 20 years of arguing about who takes out the garbage today, you know, things can be, you could get a little mundane view of things, which is wrong. And we have to guard against that. And we always, in all of our relationships, see Krishna in the center. So that was what he was saying. You know, yes, the wife should serve and, you know, and love her husband. And similarly, the husband serves and loves his wife. So this reciprocal relationship, we both see each other, first as servants of Krishna, as devotees, as Vaishnavas, then secondly, as their particular relationship, you know, then everything goes well, and everything's successful. So he showed this perfect example, having no attraction to the material world, but great attraction and great love for Krishna and for the Vaishnavas. In fact, he often preached about that people should hear and chant in association with devotees. And he would talk about sadhu sangha. And he said it's much better than actually just solitary going off in solitary secluded bhajan. That it's better to do bhajan with devotees. To come as we are right now, hearing and chanting together in the temple. So it's very, very, very beneficial. Okay. Something's past the time, so it's too long, and we're going to run out of time. So, Gaur Kishor Das Babaji set a standard for complete attraction to Krishna, absorption in Krishna, Radha Krishna, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and having been attached to Krishna and simultaneously detached from material affairs. So he had the standard of worldly renunciation is what he's known for. And it's, of course, his disappearance today must have been someone planned it this way, that it coincides with the day of Bhishma Panchaka and Ekadasi, Kartik, in the month of Kartik, because these are all times of year they're somewhat known, you know, as times of maybe taking on some austerity or some vrata or like that. And now, in general, Vaishnavas are not terribly concerned about the idea of austerities and special vrittas and special this and that and different ceremonies and rituals, you know, anything, especially anything that's karmakanda, that type of thing. But there are certain times of the year that Vaishnavas, you know, do celebrate and do sometimes perform vrittas. And Jiva Goswami in the Bhaktisiddhanta notes that, particularly also citing Rupa Goswami, that what the devotees put emphasis on are the special days of Vaishnava importance like Janmashtami, Ekadasi today, and the month of Kartik. And Jiva Goswami says that Rupa Goswami in his instructions, you know, Nectar Devotion, etc., you know, mentions Kartik as an important vrata. That so we recognize some of these specific times, and they do give us very, very special times for hearing, chanting, remembering Krishna. Because Jiva also emphasized, of course, that what is really the primary vrata, the primary austerity sacrifice for Vaishnavas. It's not really, we don't imitate Gorky Shordas Babaji, we don't have to eat mud off the bank of the river, we don't have to, you know, use our bhajan kutir, use a latrine, anything like that, or an outhouse. But what we do is emphasis on hearing, chanting, remembering about Krishna. So Jiva says that those are the best austerities. The best vrittas, if you want to take on some austerity in these times, increase your hearing and chanting. It's quite simple. I mean, sometimes I hear about very elaborate austerities devotees are doing, and I suppose for some people that may be helpful. I have no propensity for austerity myself, or very much ability, so I try to increase chanting rounds during Kartik, and I figure that's good to do. So we don't, as I said, we don't need to imitate, but we do want to get the benefit. And the benefit is in increasing our hearing, chanting, and remembering. I was thinking about what we do, which this is hardly on austerity, what we do during the month of Damodar, singing the Damodar Ostakam, offering flowers, and then offering candles. That's something that's joyful. you almost don't think of this as an austerity or vrata, right? But we do it as a special thing, and why? To gain some special benefit, or, you know, to get some punya, or not really. We do it so we can remember this beautiful pastime of Krishna and Mother Yashoda and his love for his devotees and his devotees' love for him, and how, as we sing and we recite in the translations every day, how Krishna is bound by his devotees' love. It's very, very special. This is a very deep philosophical point. You're not going to find that in too many other philosophical or religious traditions, that Krishna becomes so satisfied by the pure, unadulterated love of his devotees that he gives himself to them. Krishna actually says, I am controlled by Mother Yashoda's love, right? So he lets her bind him around the waist. So, you know, we all know this story. We've been, you know, singing it year after year after year for decades. But it's always sweet, isn't it? Right? Is anybody, when the first time, first Kartik, when the first, you know, time the candles and we start singing down the Dharashtakam, how many devotees think, oh gosh, I've done this for so many years, you know? No, it's fresh. It's blissful, it's pleasing to us, because Krishna is always fresh and pleasing and blissful. And so, you know, we get a little taste of that again. And that's really what the devotees appreciate. Not so much interested in specific benefits, although benefits are there. They are mentioned in the scriptures, like Skanda Purana says something like, you know, you get two times the benefit of any service done during Kartik, or, you know, I don't know what all the numbers are, but yeah, there are extra benefits. But that's an interesting thing, because maybe I can get it. I had an interesting letter. If my phone here is acting up on me, I know I have it somewhere here. Well, anyway. This letter from Srila Prabhupada, 1969, Los Angeles, to Jayapataka Brahmachari at that time. And Srila Prabhupada, because he said, Jayapataka had asked him a question, what is the specific benefit of Kartik, the month of Kartik and Damodar? And Prabhupada said, as far as devotees are concerned, we don't really look for a special benefit or anything special from it. He said, it is just like if a store offers a special sale to get new customers. He said, it's like that in that these different benefits are offered as inducements to those who are not devotees or those who are, you know, not really committed. You know, so, oh, do this, you get extra benefit, do that. You know, in other words, it helps to bring people in to become attracted to Krishna, and they get extra benefit, extra attraction doing it. But he says, for the pure devotees, there is no need. He says, you know, we don't need a special sale. We're already convinced of the product, he says, you know. So he says, so we do these things anyway. We don't look for any particular special benefit out of any of these special times a year. We just do it to increase our hearing and chanting, remembering Krishna and his pastimes and like that. And I don't know what happened because there's no internet here. I can't pick it up again. So, but it's a real nice letter. It's as I said, it's Los Angeles. It's Jayapataka in 1969. If anyone wants to look it up. So that's the benefit for us. It gives us an opportunity to increase our bhakti. And that's really what the whole purpose of what we're doing is. We want to increase our love for Krishna, our remembrance of Krishna, for the spiritual master, for Radha Krishna, and of course, Gaura Thai. And devotees find those things to be what is enlivening and what is motivating for us to continue and to increase our devotional service and our devotional practices. And because we have this wonderful experience, I was just thinking as a final thought, today being Thanksgiving, we should remember what we are thankful for. And I was thinking yesterday of all the things that we could be thankful for. I mean, the list goes on and on. Thankful for Srila Prabhupada. For what? Well, saving my life, number one, you know. and then we go from there. You know, giving us this wonderful practice, learning, knowing about Krishna, having this wonderful temple, wonderful association of devotees, having this wonderful philosophy. You know, you can all make your own list of everything that we feel grateful for. Because, you know, we often hear this phrase, causeless mercy. And I've thought about that a little bit lately and seeing, well, who does it apply to? Well, mostly it applies to me. Because I see nothing that I've particularly done to receive any particular mercy from Krishna or Lord Chaitanya or Srila Prabhupada, but nevertheless, here it is. It's been given to us. It's a gift, right? Yeah. We say Namaho Mahavaranaya Krishna Prema Pridayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Krishna Namaha. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given freely this gift of Krishna Prema. How do we get that? What did we do? You know what it says in all of these scriptures about anyone who's become a devotee or chant the holy name must have performed hundreds of births of sacrifices and austerities like that? I don't think I did those things. maybe I did, but I certainly don't remember anything like that. What I remember is Srila Prabhupada's causeless mercy. And that is Srila Prabhupada's mercy, Radharani's mercy, Krishna's mercy, and of course Lord Chaitanya. And that is what I'm thankful for, at least on this Thanksgiving, and having these wonderful acharyas like Gorky Shortas Babaji that through the disciplic succession, they pave the way for us, they give us the example, and they continue this line of pure spiritual knowledge, of the highest knowledge from Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, this the Siddhanta, the final conclusion of all Vedic literatures, Krishna Su Bhagavan Swayam, that knowing Krishna and knowing his position as the supreme personality of Godhead. Okay, so wonderful, glorious day for us in so many ways, and even though I spoke against it, do take advantage of these days and get a little benefit for increasing devotional service. Why not? Questions, comments? Apurva, welcome.
You're early. It's quarter up.
I really enjoyed your class.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, so this is just a thought that came up because... I remembered a little more specifics about that pastime when Bhaktisiddhanta was asking very fervently.
Yeah, tell us.
On continuing. Well, it was at some one of those times, Gorkhasura Das Babaji was, I know it's documented, he said, well, I'll have to check in with Chaitanya.
Oh, Chaitanya. Yes, I heard that. Yeah.
And while you were giving the class, I just took it for granted. Okay, yeah, he's checking with Lord Chaitanya. So obviously it means that he's, you know, directly in connection with Lord Chaitanya. Yeah. And how wonderful that is, that he was actually part of Lord Chaitanya's. So I think, and then he came back the second time, and then he told him, well, I forgot to ask Lord Chaitanya. Yeah. And then
and I think the third time, he said, Lord Chaitanya hasn't told me yet. I haven't got an answer yet. that's a nice part of that pastime. Thank you. Other thoughts, comments, questions? Do we have anyone on the side? Prana Govinda, please.
Srila Prabhupada introduced Gaur Gayatri to the Brahman, second initiated devotee in Ishkan. It comes from Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's time. It was not there before.
The second initiation.
No.
Is that what you're saying?
No. Gaur Gayatri.
Oh, Gaur Gayatri.
Yeah, particularly.
Oh, I was wondering about that the other day, because it couldn't have been there since back when it was given to Lord Brahma, since Lord Chaitanya hadn't appeared yet.
No.
Yeah.
He was challenged in a Bara Akra. Bara Akra means a gathering place of all the Vaishnavas. And they literally challenged him with many things, and this is one of the things, that where you come up with this speculation, Gaur Gayatri. And then he instantly just said, oh, this is in this Puranas, and this Chaitanya Upanishad has this verse number, and just quoted. And they had a many scholar in that assembly. They immediately took out the book and they found it. They were like, how come we never saw that?
Hmm.
This is so powerful mantra. So Lord Babaji started chanting because of this. So we are very fortunate because of... And Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, after he revealed this, then somebody in the back started plotting. That was Guru Krishnadanta Babaji. He promoted his own disciple for the highest purpose.
Yes.
Yeah. There was another story, also very short. Ajatapunna, who was asking Gaur Krishnadas Babaji, can you give me the formula to get Krishna Prem quick? He said, you have to go and help Bimala Prasad. That time Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's name was Bimala Prasad. And so he went to Bimala Prasad and he asked that I came to do bhajan. He said, yes, your bhajan is carry the bricks for this building of birthplace and cut the jungle. So after 3 days, he said, I came to do bhajan, not this. He said, this is your bhajan. But he gave up. Then he came to Gaur Krishnadas Babaji and complained, I came to do bhajan. Why they're giving me this kind of service like an outsider? Anybody can do it. But I want to do bhajan. So then Gaur Krishnadas Babaji says, in order to do bhajan, you need two potencies, spiritual potency. One is Sambit potency, that feeling and relationship will be established. And that is Siddhanta Saraswati. Where are you going to get the potency from? Somewhere else? From hell? It was very heavy. Of course, this man did not understand. He went to Vrindavan and he started doing bhajan, chanting, you know, hidingly in a cave. And in 3 days, some robber came and killed him.
Mm.
And the news came to Gaur Krishnadas Babaji, and Gaur Krishnadas Babaji said that they do not understand. He is not a young boy. He is a Siddhanta Saraswati. He is talking about his own disciple. He said he is directly incarnation of Sambit potency.
Sambit potency, knowledge.
Yeah, very powerful. Oh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we are very fortunate for that.
There was another one I was reading this morning, some of the pastimes that suddenly he was some materialistic person and they were trying to get some benefit or something. And he told them what they should do, and they refused to do it. And they thought, well, what does he know? Or they walked away, and they continued some very, very bad activities, I guess, despite Gorkhisher's instruction. And something happened to them, like they got leprosy and died or something. It's not good to offend a pure devotee. That's for sure.
What year did he pass away?
1917.
15.
15.
Oh, 1915.
Yeah, they're right around the same time. Yeah.
Why don't you give the pastime of Bhakti Siddhanta when they were going to drag?
Oh, yeah, that's another one. I'm sure you've all heard that when Gorkhisherdas Babaji was going, left his body, all of the sort of local pandits and, you know, temple managers all were talking about what to do, where his body would be, because they all wanted his samadhi, his burial place, to be like in their temple. You know how they are in the courtyards and things. Why? Because he was so well known, it would attract people to come. You know, it's like, okay, we're going to make it more of an attraction in our temple. People come and give donations. Very materialistic outlook, right? So Bhaktisiddhanta said, no. Of course, there was one other part. Before that, they said, well, his instruction was, he says, when I pass away, I want you to take this body and tie it behind horses and drag it through the town so everyone can see how useless a material body is without the soul. Once the soul is left, it's useless. So this will demonstrate it. So they said, well, that was his instruction. We'll do that first. And I said, you are not doing that. He said, this is my Guru Maharaj, and I am his only disciple. And I, you know, will say what will happen. And, you know, he said, we're not going to do something that would be so disgraceful, so, you know, offensive, you know, to my spiritual master. And where did he end up? He ended up near, Bhaktisiddhanta did finally install him in a...
in Navadvip and later on.
Yeah, it's near Mayapur. It's near the yoga pit, right?
Down, he's just still there.
It's just down from the yoga pit a little bit, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's Gorkhisher's samadhi is actually there. But the other part of it was, when they said, well, you know, you're just, who are you? You know, you're some young brahmachari or whatever. It wasn't that young, but he said, yes, I'm a brahmachari, and I've been in a total austere brahmachari for so many years of my life. And he said, if any of you are brahmachari, then you're welcome to do whatever you want. If, you know, if you've actually, he said, that anyone here, and they said, well, you know. Now, these were all supposed to be big pandits and everything, and, you know, very saintly people. He said, well, if any of you have restrained from having sexual relationships for the last year, then I'll let you do what you want. And they all look kind of ashamed and put their heads down. Well, no. Well, how about anybody for 1 month? Anyway, I think he went down like this. Anybody for 1 day? You know, and they finally, they gave up. They realized his superiority to them, and that he was a very renounced pure Vaishnav, where they were basically just materialistic people who sort of ran temple businesses, for the most part. Okay, we should quit now. Thank you all so much. I'll go straight to Prabhupada.